research that resonates.
Schweitzer has not been wrong on any of his years and years of reporting on the Bidens.
Investigations that matter.
If your last name wasn't Biden, do you think you would have been asked to be on the board of Burisma?
I don't know. Probably not. But that's, you know, I don't think that there's a lot of things that would have happened in my life that that if my last name wasn't Biden.
The only entities, the only people that would report on this, and Peter Schweitzer, who deserves a Medal of Freedom, in my view.
This is The Drill Down with Peter Schweitzer.
This is Peter Schweitzer, and welcome to The Drill Down, where we relentlessly expose cronyism, corruption, and the abuse of power in Washington, D.C. I'm here, actually not here, I'm remote, with Eric Eggers, who is the co-pilot of this program. Eric, how are you today?
I mean, I'm having some childhood abandonment issues resurface because I'm in this room by myself, and you're out down in sunny South Florida, and we're just trying to continue to fight for freedom and, prudent use of the American tax dollar. And I know you're over there in South Florida doing the same thing, but I remain impressed by the impact you're having, no matter where you are. Here we are. I think it's week three of the book launch, Blood Money, and we're actually seeing, this is a really big deal. Congress is taking action based, I think, in part of something that you've reported on in Blood Money.
Yeah, no, it's very, very exciting. Congressman Comer, who's the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, of course, he's been leading the investigation on Hunter Biden and on a number of other issues, announced just last week that they are going to be investigating CCP activities in the United States. That includes their link to fentanyl, but also political warfare that they're engaging in. And what I'm excited about is that, you know, Congressman Comer said they want to look at how the CCP is trying to defeat us without actually firing a shot. And that is the premise behind Blood Money, that there is a lot that's going on that goes just below the level of a kinetic war, but we're not paying attention to it because we have the wrong mindset. I think Congressman Comer is signaling that he does have the right mindset, and he's going to be able to use his subpoena power to make a big difference here. So I'm very excited about it.
What you should be excited about is your book is so dang good. It's inspired so much congressional action. That's not even what I was actually talking about. Like, yes, it's true that the House Oversight Committee is going to investigate the allegations from Blood Money about Chinese activity. But what's also true is that you got actual members of Congress to come together. Washington doesn't agree on anything. But last week, you had 352 members of the House of Representatives vote in favor of something, this legislation that would require the Chinese parent company ByteDance to divest in TikTok within 6 months or actually face being shut down. That's literally what you've been talking about, what I've seen you speak about in person, because of the threat that TikTok poses to the United States, which you also reveal in Blood Money.
Yeah, no, this is a great opportunity, I think, to take some positive action. It's not a perfect bill, but it's a very, very good bill. And I think it's the most effective way to deal with the fact that you have this Chinese spy app, this Chinese access to our young people that's occurring unfettered. So very exciting to see congressional action on that front. And yes, we take great pride in the fact that this bill comes out just 2 weeks after Blood Money was released. And TikTok is a big highlight of this problem that we discuss in the book.
Yeah, it actually reminds me as something of a GAI and Peter Schweitzer historian. It reminds me of the book that spurred the activity called the Stock Act, right? I mean, this is something that when you wrote a book called Throw Them All Out, which exposed insider trading in Congress, you had very few interest or very few members of Congress are interested in actually passing legislation to ban insider trading. Your book comes out, the 60 Minutes piece comes out with it. And now all of a sudden you have a ton of bipartisan support for something that seems like most people would agree with. So that's why I say it's got major Stock Act vibes. But not everybody, Peter Schweitzer, agrees with you on this. We have clips from Rand Paul, who was speaking to Tucker Carlson. I think we like Tucker Carlson and we like Rand Paul. But they are suggesting, and by they, I mean both of them, but Rand Paul specifically is saying that the idea of banning TikTok under the premises that you're suggesting it should be banned aren't necessarily true. And so we're going to play two clips. One of them is when Rand Paul is saying the ownership of TikTok isn't really Chinese. Listen to this.
There are now accusations. They say, oh, TikTok's owned by the Chinese government. The Chinese communists own it. Well, that's not even true. You can't say stuff just over and over again that's not true. TikTok is owned by about 60% of it's owned by international investors from all over the world. 20% is owned by the two Chinese software engineers that created the app, and 20% is owned by the employees of TikTok, which 7,000 of them are Americans. So there's a significant nexus of Americans in the ownership, and then there's a significant nexus of Americans using this.
So first of all, Peter Schweitzer, why do you hate 7,000 Americans? That's my question.
Yeah, no, I have a lot of respect for Rand Paul, for the work that he did on COVID and others, but Senator Paul is flat out wrong here. What he's doing is really superimposing what an American corporate ownership looks like, but trying to apply to a Chinese context. The first thing that he gets wrong here is, yes, there are international investors. There are international investors, Americans, that have large stakes in ByteDance. The problem is they are not controlling share owners. They don't get to vote on decisions that are made in terms of where the app is going and what it's doing. The second thing he completely ignores, and this has been reported by Fortune magazine and others, is that those international investors are subject to an agreement when they bought into ByteDance, which says if they disparage or criticize the company publicly, their shares can be confiscated by the company. In other words, all those shareholders that he wants to praise and talk about and, by the way, take money from are under gag orders. They are not allowed to honestly express opinions they might have or concerns they might have. There's no agreement like that with any U.S. company in America. So this notion of trying to pretend that this is just like an American company and the 60% international shareholders are important completely obscures and misses the fact of who actually controls this app, plus the fact, as I point out in the book, that the algorithm that sort of fuels ByteDance and that also the derivative of TikTok, that is not only a company secret, the Chinese government has designated that algorithm as a state secret. So this is not even a normal company by Chinese standards.
Well, maybe like company and corporate secrets are something that kind of come naturally and intuitively to Rand Paul. He's from Kentucky. I don't believe Colonel Sanders ever actually disclosed what all 66 spices from that. So it's not abnormal for companies to have some proprietary information withheld. That's an interesting response. And by the way, and we'll throw the picture up there on the screen for people watching on YouTube or elsewhere, but the fact that the shareholders signed the agreement that their shares can be taken if they disparage TikTok was recently reported by Fortune magazine. That's crazy, by the way. Just think about that. And so it's especially ironic when Rand Paul argues that people that want to ban TikTok are against freedom of speech. I mean, it's a particular irony on that issue. But he also says, let's listen to one more clip from Senator Paul, that the Chinese control, whether or not you agree that there's the ownership stake is as diverse as he says, he also says the Chinese control over TikTok is also misrepresented. Here's what he says about that.
Now, the company that owns TikTok also owns something like TikTok that is censored, and the Chinese let that be broadcast throughout China. The Chinese government does have a member of the board. It's called Douyin. It's the Chinese TikTok. But they don't have a member of the board of ByteDance. They don't control ByteDance. And the data is now kept in Oracle Cloud, centered in Texas.
Yeah, again, God bless Rand Paul. I agree with him on so many issues. He's either not being honest here or he's just being naive. The cloud is held in Texas, not in China. But guess what? The parent company, ByteDance, has access to that data. And it's already been demonstrated repeatedly that they have access to that data. So again, this is a sort of ridiculous, naive position. I would hope that Senator Rand Paul would look at this again and he would use the same skepticism and incisive mind he used to dissect Tony Fauci, that he would use that same mind to look at what the CCP is actually doing. Remember, TikTok is a subsidiary wholly owned by ByteDance, which is the parent company, which its headquarters is in Beijing. It's not that far from the Ministry of State Security. And in fact, it does joint research with the Chinese Ministry of State Security, which is their spy apparatus. And they also do research on how to manipulate people online with the Chinese Ministry of State Security. So he's just being remarkably naive here. I appreciate his libertarian leanings, but you cannot apply that when you're dealing with this kind of state and this kind of company.
So you have a way of just saying things because you know them to be true and you've known them to be true for a long time. And so they sort of don't resonate with you as they might for someone who's hearing it for the first or second time. But just for people that haven't been as clued into this as you have been, the last two things you said, I think, should just give a lot of people pause as they consider this conversation. And I recognize that reasonable people can disagree. We also, by the way, are about to talk about a third reason why Rand Paul may be representing this as he is. Maybe not an honesty issue or a naivete issue, but a bankrolling issue. But the fact that TikTok partners with Chinese's spy ministry, number one, and number two, that they've done research and that they've also done research on how to manipulate people online seems problematic. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. And again, I mean, this is the situation. If you are a company in China, you're at the beck and call of the Ministry of State Security. But it even goes further, as I pointed out, they're actually doing joint research. The algorithm, as I said, is a state secret. So even by Chinese standards, ByteDance is not a normal company. And people like Rand Paul and others who want to sort of transpose American corporate governance and say, well, look, they don't have a person on the board. That's not how it works in China. It's a very, very different system of governance, which is proved by the fact that the American investors cannot criticize the company, as I mentioned earlier, without risking losing their shares. This is not a normal company. It shouldn't be treated as such. And the question is, do you want a company like that where many of the senior editorial people either work for the Chinese Ministry of Propaganda or the Chinese state? Do you want this company to have unfettered access to young people in America? Because as I point out in the book, Eric, they explicitly marketed TikTok as a parent-free zone for young people. And they would push the idea that, you know, on Facebook, you know, you become friends, you know, your parents can friend you, you can see what they're posting. That kind of arrangement doesn't work, of course, on TikTok. It's a very different system. And they actually have pushed the idea of wanting unfettered access to our young people. We can't allow that to happen. This is a great solution because the investors, even in China, get made whole by selling the company. And we now take it out of the hands of the Chinese government.
Yeah, you actually write several different things in Blood Money that I think are quite alarming for people. By the way, it's Rand Paul is not the only one who is against this ban, although he has maybe arguably been more consistent being against the banning of it. And there's reasons why people like Vivek Ramaswamy, who when he was campaigning called TikTok digital fentanyl, now has come out against the ban. And that has to do with a guy named Jeff Yass. And so you talked about that speech I saw you give in Palm Beach last week, which for whatever it's worth, for people that are considering hiring Peter Schweitzer to come give a speech, the Palm Beach County Republican Club said it's the best speech they've ever heard. Like he was literally, I had to be as secure as beating them back with their walkers, as it turned out. So, but this guy named Jeff Yass is worth $27 billion. He's one of the richest people in the United States. And he made his money with his firm is called Susquehanna International Group, or SIG. And they have a China-focused VC arm, SGI China. And going back 10, 12 years ago, they started investing in and propping up Chinese startups. And they currently have 369 Chinese startups they've funded, including a company that would become ByteDance. They invested $5 million over a decade ago in ByteDance. It's reportedly a 15% ownership stake today, Jeff Yass's firm has. Yass's personal share is believed to be valued at $21 billion. Now, his net worth is $27 billion. His investment in ByteDance is believed to be worth $21 billion. So you could see that, you know, he's a big fan of ByteDance and TikTok. And he's also a big fan of Rand Paul. He's given Rand Paul since 2015 at least $23 million to his various political campaigns, including when he ran for president in 2016. He gave $10 million to his recent Senate re-election campaign in 2022. So do we think that that's a coincidence, or we think that Rand Paul maybe has other reasons for not necessarily being so bothered by the lack of freedom of speech issues for TikTok shareholders and other impact it may have on America's youth?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. I mean, look, I think if you look at Senator Rand Paul, there's a certain consistency to his view. He's libertarian. He's very, very skeptical of anything involving federal power. But he's honestly not disclosing or discussing the fact that his biggest financial backer is a major shareholder and investor in this company. And I applaud Jeff Yass that he's an entrepreneur. He invests in things. He makes money. But here's the thing. He decided to do business with this company in China. He decided to do business in the context of this disparagement clause where he can't talk openly or criticize the company openly. He made those choices. He made those contracts. And in the libertarian mindset that he has, he needs to live and abide by those. As a government, public, need to evaluate this in terms of what applies for the good of our children and for our national security. So I think he's wrong. And I think the flow of money from Jeff Yass and others is absolutely relevant to this discussion, because there's a massive self-interest with these investors that made this choice on their own to make a risky investment. It's paid off. But you're in bed with the CCP and you're operating in a foreign country that does not have a Western system of law. So, suck it up and just deal with it. That's my advice.
That's your advice. Rand Paul, for whatever it's worth, is not the only one who has continued to come out against this ban. Now, some surprising names. We talked about Vivek Ramaswamy is one of them. Former President Donald Trump, you may have heard Peter Schweitzer. I know you're down there meeting with prospective donors. The Trump campaign's also, as it turns out, looking for donors. They face a $454 million civil fraud judgment. I know that some of the people that you're speaking to are also hearing from the former president. In 2020, Donald Trump actually issued an executive order saying TikTok was a threat to national security, foreign policy, and the economy of the United States. He actually tried to ban it, but he's since come out against this TikTok ban. Do you think that there's some possible Yass-like temptations with the former president as well? He was invited to a Club for Growth event, and Jeff Yass is part of the Club for Growth, and I think they've got some financial ties there as well.
Yeah, I think that certainly we have to look at that. Trump seems to be wavering on this. You're quite right. When he was president, he issued an executive order to force the sale of TikTok to an American company. That's essentially what this bill does. Then Trump said he didn't think the bill was a good idea. Then he came out a couple of days ago and said that, yes, we've got to make sure that China doesn't own this. His fear seems to be primarily that somebody like Mark Zuckerberg, who owns Meta, who has Facebook and Instagram, might be the one who buys this up. And of course, as we know, as you've documented, Zuckerberg gets very active and uses his political power and his corporate power for the benefit of his political causes. And that's what Trump's fear seems to be. Here's the thing. There is no way that it would ever pass antitrust scrutiny for Mark Zuckerberg to be able to buy this. He already has two of the largest social media platforms in America. They're not going to give him the number one, which is TikTok. So Mark Zuckerberg is not going to get this company. I think what you're going to see is a company emerge that's going to bid that's probably not even in the online space because TikTok is such a powerful app. So I understand the concerns that people have. There are certainly things we need to be doing to look and curtail the power of big tech companies like Facebook. You and I did a film called The Creepy Line about this back in 2018. My view is let's deal with TikTok first, and then let's look at other ways we can curtail the power of these U.S.-based online platforms as well. But it's not an either-or thing. We need to do both.
Yeah, I think the Chinese espionage piece of it is obviously incredibly concerning. I think in and of itself is sufficient to have the discussion that the members of Congress seem to have settled on one side of. We'll see what happens in the Senate. I want to get your assessment of what you think will happen there. President Biden, for whatever sort, says he will sign this bill. We'll see if that proves to be true. But it's something you actually wrote in Blood Money, two stats that I think stand out that I think are another reason just to give serious pause to what's happening with TikTok. And it's related to the creepy line that we did produce back in 2018 about the role Google and Facebook can play in shaping American behavior and shaping American lives, including American political outcomes. There's just a new story this week. The Media Research Center did some analysis and said that they think Google has impacted American elections 41 different times since 2008. We certainly know about what happened in 2020 with suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop. And we've talked about with things like search engine manipulation effect and ranking bias, how they can shift. We've had Dr. Epstein on the program. Tens of millions of votes among independent voters. So that's a real threat. And so in that context of what social media companies can do to American politics, what you wrote in Blood Money is this. Because every TikTok feed is unique, there's no way of knowing what each person is seeing. That gives the app tremendous stealth power to shape or distort public opinion, the specifics of which are at least untraceable to us. And you noted that the algorithm, which allows them to do that, is a state Chinese secret. Combine that with the fact that the American TikTok users spend, as you note, 82 minutes a day scrolling through the app, which is three times the screen time of Americans using Snapchat or Twitter and twice as much as Facebook. And you have an incredibly powerful tool that we don't actually know the impact of it, and we don't know who's using it. And that's, by the way, something that most people are generally either ignorant of or okay with. What we do know is it's owned by China as it stands.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you know, this is the thing. I mean, the app is designed to be addictive, and we know that all social media companies want eyeballs on their screens. But what TikTok has done is unprecedented compared to other platforms. And of course, in China, Douyin, which is the equivalent to TikTok in the United States, they limit the amount of screen time, especially young people have. The app shuts down after a while. They don't put those restrictions on their app in the United States because it has a very, very different purpose. And if you look at the content that exists on Douyin in China, it's all about engineering and science and culture and history. Through the lens of the CCP, obviously. You know, in the United States, you have somebody with blue hair screaming about, you know, vegan issues or whatever. It's a very, very different app. This is intentional. It's partly what the Chinese government calls cognitive warfare, this notion that the battle between the CCP and the West is not just about who has the most tanks and missiles. It's who has the most intellectual capability to expand and innovate in their economy. And they want American kids looking at these crazy videos, you know, dumbing them down and numbing their minds. And they want their own children to be consuming mental spinach in contrast. So it just shows again that the goals and the interests of the company, TikTok, are steered much more by the interests of the CCP than they are in the interests of the consumer.
Yeah, ironically, an app that focused on history, engineering, math, culture in the United States would never work because why would the kids play with that if they can play on TikTok? So it's like, why don't I do that? I can watch some blue hairs with the vegan and the dancing. It's great. No, it's really interesting stuff, and I just love to see that, you know, once again, you started research on this book several years ago, and so Congress is kind of catching up to you. I know a lot of people are concerned when members of both parties come together on an issue, and especially if the Joe Biden administration seems to be in favor of it. But what do you think happens now? Do you think that it dies in the Senate, or do you think that there's enough support on this issue to actually see something happen before the election?
Well, I think there are going to be efforts in the Senate to not even have a vote. I think that's what Senate Democrats are certainly going to push for. And honestly, I'm skeptical. Joe Biden saying that he would sign this bill, I'm skeptical of that. I think it's really more him trying to show that he has a certain toughness towards China. But we will see. My hope is that you at least should have the debate in the Senate. And I think that there is enough bipartisan support. I'm obviously skeptical when people in Washington, D.C. want to expand their power in some way. But this bill is so narrow in its focus. It's specific only to media companies that are owned by a foreign adversarial power. You don't get much more specific than that. They were originally going to write the bill to apply only to ByteDance and TikTok, but it was deemed pretty quickly that that would not be constitutional. You can't just name one company to pass the law. So I think it's a great solution, and I'm very, very glad that the research and work that we do at GAI is, again, helping inform the public debate in a good way. Because ultimately, as we talk about all the time, Eric, it's not just about alerting people. We're hoping that we're going to spur people to action. That seems to have happened in this case.
No, I think that's it's excellent. It's absolutely true. It's a fascinating development, and it's very encouraging. I think it does speak to when you report facts, as we try to do here at the Government Accountability and in your books and on this Drill Down podcast, good things can happen. And, you know, that's what we've done. We report facts, and you're seeing members of Congress take legislative action. That's one of my takeaways. The other takeaway is that your book's been out 3 weeks, and you've already got two different distinct congressional actions because of the reporting in this book. So it just further underscores my longstanding belief that, you know, you've been on the road for 2 weeks. You don't actually have to be in the office to be effective. And I know you know that's a personal belief of mine, Peter. So, you know, congratulations. Way to go.
Well, thank you, Eric. I appreciate you handling taking care of the mothership while I'm gone. And we appreciate you, the audience, as always, taking your time to listen to this podcast. We know there are a lot of them out there. We know your time is valuable. So thank you for taking the time. You can find out more about our research at thedrilldown.com. You can find my book, Blood Money, at bookstores everywhere. It's at Amazon. It's at Costco. It's at Walmart, at Barnes & Noble. And we appreciate you always listening to us. Until next time, thank you very much.